Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
She made a promise to her dying sister that she would do everything possible to end the shame, pain, fear, and hopelessness caused by cancer. Her sister, Susan G. Komen, and that promise has resulted in over $3.2 billion in cancer research, education, screening, and treatment. But her commitment has not ended there, as she's also served as U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Hungary and as U.S. Chief of Protocol. The host of her own weekly program on Newsmax, Ambassador Nancy Brinker, joins me on the Michael Steele Podcast. Well, we got her here in the room with us. Ambassador Brinker, it's such a pleasure to have you in the house. We have been trying to get together either on my side of the street or your side of the street over at Newsmax. I'm glad that you could take a moment to stop into the neighborhood.
Well, I have to say I appreciate that, Michael. And I have to thank you for all the work you've done over the years with honesty, truthfulness, and very, very strong direction. And I just want to thank you. I think you've rendered a tremendous service to our country. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, as I like to say, I'm a plug and play kind of guy, you know, just put me in, coach, and I'm ready to rock and roll. I'll take those arrows to protect the rest of the troops. But I want to thank you too. I mean, you, a lot of people, I don't think fully appreciate the work that you have done in both the private sector as well as the public sector of your life, and have managed to really transform the game for so many women, so many men, particularly those who are battling with cancer and dealing with cancer. You know, the Susan G. Komen Foundation is just an amazing effort on your part to take that very personal moment with your sister and to turn it into something that's helping people globally.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a real, you know, a lot of the people, and you and I know this so well, who complain about things in our country and that this group's too loud and that group's too loud. You know what I was thinking the other day? Thank God we have the right to do that in our country. Yeah. We still have the freedom to assemble, the freedom to express our thoughts. Sometimes the outcome isn't always good, but thank you for saying that. And I'm proud of having built the Susan Komen organization. Mm-hmm. It's now in this point, that was almost 50 years ago when I started this.
That's amazing.
And it was really with the war on cancer when President Nixon declared in 1971, and you'll love this, I just interviewed his grandson, so that dates me enough, but who's a full adult and so brilliant, Chris Nixon Cox. Mm-hmm. And but thank you. And I'm grateful we had a country that I could grow this, because I could see what was wrong and what she challenged me to do as she lay dying. She died 2 weeks later after she asked me that. And I realized I had this obligation to do it. It wasn't that I was thinking about that. It was that I wanted her to stay alive and I wanted her journey to be understood.
Well, I think what people, and I hope they do appreciate, because I know those who've been touched by your work are aware that you and those who fight with you have invested $3 billion plus into cancer research. Folks, that's a nice day at the park, you know, when you're able to find those kinds of resources and put them to work, to help reduce deaths and to deal head on with breast cancer and other forms of cancer that, women and men, confront every day. And one of the things that I appreciate about that, particularly in the breast cancer space, is how, you have said to men, dude, you know, this can happen to you too. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, this is not just something that's isolated just to women. So that, right. that information and, explanation of how we're all impacted by cancer, I think has changed lives tremendously. So I just wanted to put that on the table for my team here at the Steel Podcast, to let them know, A, how much I appreciate you and your work, and B, how important that work is. Because you make a very important point that despite everything else that's going on around us, we're still free to engage and to learn and to benefit from the work that your foundation is doing.
Well, and I appreciate that, Michael. And I couldn't let this go without also saying that I'm still doing this work, but in a different way, created a new organization because it had to be, because it's so granular. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I believe that after what we've been through the last several years in our government and governance and lack of real support in many ways in our healthcare world with people who are very under-resourced, failing to recognize that. And since the war on cancer was dedicated 50 years ago, we're still not applying what we know.
Right.
And what we know is that screening, if you don't do anything else, if you screen a population, you will find more early disease than late disease, and you will lower the burden to the patient and possibly mostly deliver her or him a healthy life ahead.
Right.
Because early cancers are very, very curable today. So that's what we've done in Palm Beach County. We have 80,000 women who've had no care. They have no primary care because we mostly have for-profit hospitals. And so we decided we were going to get to every single one of them. We hired and brought on 10 navigators, and they're people who are between social workers and nurses, to go out into their communities where they lived, bring us patients that had not been examined before or very seldom. Mm-hmm. We got some mammography equipment dedicated to the, you know what the federally qualified healthcare centers are.
Yeah, uh-huh.
We got one to a whole thing dedicated to us at Found Care, which is one of our top federally qualified healthcare centers. Since that time, last winter, we have either educated, screened, treated over about 15,000 of those women.
Wow.
Next year, we're going to double it. And the reason we're going to do that is because everyone says it can't be done, and we're going to do it.
Well, folks, I've known her to be that way. So, Nancy, you want to throw down that challenge? Good luck. She will meet it and beat it. So let's broaden out a little bit from because again, it is in one sense it's rather eclectic to be so immersed in the healthcare and research space, the science of cancer treatment and research, to then move into the space that you've occupied as well as an ambassador to Hungary, the mm-hmm. Republic of Hungary, chief U.S. protocol officer. How has that experience shaped your views, and it's probably continue to shape your views of our landscape today, when you look at what's happening in Ukraine and when you look at domestically January 6th and sort of the responses to all of that? Where do you see us right now?
It's, you know, and of course the other, not to put it in national or international organization, I was very honored to be a part of was the WHO in those mm-hmm. days in that time, and which is an international organization with many of the same issues as all the organizations that are international have. But to your point, Michael, I am very worried about this. This isn't a skirmish. This is a budding war.
Right.
And I think in the hands of a dictator who we've all known, who was a member of the KGB. I'm not saying he's not a smart man. He's very smart. Yeah. I actually got to meet him when I was doing the protocol job in with President Bush 43. And we went to Russia. He, you know, toured everywhere to say goodbye to the people he'd worked with. A very, very clever man and a smart man, and no kind of a man who does not have probably too much give in his thinking, and is a dictator. Mm-hmm. And it went pretty well for a long time. A lot of Russians living better and all that. But what is missing is this opportunity to create a very, very successful Europe, a very successful Europe that includes many voices. I think he's been so threatened about Ukraine and NATO, joining NATO. NATO has been one of the most successful organizations we've ever had. And all of a sudden, when you hear the Ukraines on TV and you listen to them talk, you realize how much they cherish their country. Yeah. And their independence. They're not the same people who are always just the breadbasket of Europe. Right. These are people who, with proper investment and working on their own and, you know, working hard, and they're very generally a very smart population. Look what they've done. They've created a country that they are loyal to. They're not just living there out of desperation.
That's an important point, because I think a lot of people miss that what happened between the fall of the wall, the Berlin Wall, the crashing of communism, and the winning of the Cold War by the West, not just the US, but the West as a whole. They took advantage of that time, right, to your point, to make their country what they wanted to be, to define democracy on their terms. And whether or not they're a part of NATO remains to be seen. Right now, as of our coming together in this conversation, the European Union has indicated they are prepared to welcome them to the Union of Nations in Europe. So they have proven themselves in a way that some others may not have. And now on the precipice of this fight, to watch their once national comedian turned president, Zelensky, lead by example, to put himself on the front line of this fight on behalf of his people, I think says a lot right now about why Putin is nervous about Ukraine and wants to crush them.
Yeah, used to be able to just go to any border country, put his hand in there and take whatever he wanted, cookie jar. And it's not that way anymore. I mean, you couldn't be more right. And when you watch these wonderful interviews with the president, who is congenial, and you can see where he's a good leader of Ukraine, president of Ukraine, Zelensky. But the people, I mean, if you look at even, you can tell they're doing better. Right. They're all in their puffy coats, and they're all, you know, with their young families, and they're driving in their car. And it's hard to turn people around once you take that direction and once you encourage freedom and growth. Yeah. And I remember, you know, when George H.W. Bush came to Hungary, I wasn't there yet, of course, but when the wall came down and the celebration in the Heroes Square, when he was there, he and Barbara came, was something I don't think anybody had ever really seen. That kind of the same thing. The Hungarians were desperate to have. They'd been under domination their entire history. Mm-hmm. And now they were going to get to be free. Of course, only to have a guy that, while I admire him for being smart, he kind of has some Putin-like behavior, but typical of, you know, but seriously, he does. The country is doing well, and now a member, of course, of EU and NATO and everything else. And so, you know, it's important for people to feel. We all know everybody wants self-respect. Everybody we know in the world wants to be respected for being a person and having rights and et cetera.
From an ambassadorial perspective, having served in Hungary as our ambassador from 2001 to 2003, I believe, what is that conversation like among the network of Western ambassadors in the first instance, but then broadening that out to their counterparts that, you know, may either be a little bit more neutral on something like this or align themselves with Putin and Belarus or whatever. I mean, how does that process work when you're sitting there in Hungary and this starts to happen? Walk us through a little bit of what that's like.
Well, we were there. I was there, of course, when Iraq happened.
Right.
And in many ways, not really like this, but there are always feelings that erupt in a country. And the Hungarians don't love war. They never have liked war in all of their history. Mm-hmm. But this really probably has set a lot of them on their feet and not too happy, because there's a great affinity with Ukraine. It's almost a neighboring country, not right. But there's and there are a lot of similarities of some of the public with Hungary in terms of their education goals and the things that they do and hold dear, and engineering, building themselves out of an agricultural climate and sort of a technology. So I think there was great thought that, wow, we actually may have Europe united. We actually may, if they come, you know, to the EU. And I think I don't think that's going to go away. People, their ambitions for freedom and growth never go away.
That's something I think a lot of Americans, you know, because I get in some arguments sometimes with folks and some in my own family, about the role of the U.S. globally, the influence the U.S. has globally, which I think is still profoundly important.
Right.
Despite some who believe we should just, you know, have this whole America first mindset and that the rest of the world doesn't matter. I think we're going to see, and probably have already begun to see, how interconnected we are. Mm-hmm. Not just in terms of the geopolitical landscape, but certainly economically now, where, you know, Putin's actions are having direct impact on the price you're going to pay for a gallon of gas, whether the U.S. does anything or not, right? Whether we just sit there and go, okay, well, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That action by Putin is going to have an impact on what you pay for gas. It's going to have an impact on how much money is going to be in your 401k at the end of the year. It's going to have an impact on a whole bunch of other things, whether we do anything or not. And so it says to me how important all Americans must appreciate the global interconnected nature of not just our politics, but our economies, our culture. As an ambassador, you get to see that firsthand. You get to represent our country, hopefully in happy times, but also in very trying times. How do you convey the U.S. Role and position in places like Hungary, or in places in other European capitals that may or may not be inclined to appreciate that American leadership?
I think it's really important, to your point, that before you go to a country and you're assigned and you want to be careful not to take on too many policy issues. And for someone like me, I get a little sometimes opinionated, but it's important for you to speak your values. Right. You know what I mean? And when I came there, I said to them in many ways, I want to help you with your needs. And I want you to understand who we are and why that makes us all a better world. And those needs were everything from, you know, more stature for women and their jobs and their lives, their healthcare. They knew what I had done. And my goal was, when I got to Hungary, their feelings and their interactions with cancer and breast cancer were about where we were in the early 70s. Wow. And I wanted to see that change, because they have some very good hospitals. They're the home of Semmelweis, Dr. Semmelweis, who taught all the doctors to wash their hands, you know. And so they have a curiosity, very smart people, 98% literacy rate. They have a lot going for them. Unfortunately, they're want to be very independent and stubborn sometimes.
Right.
But we constantly wanted to try to not export our values, but to let them know what our values are. And where we could fit, we fit really well. And where we had disagreements, we probably still disagree. But isn't that blessed for us as citizens of the world to have that kind of relationship?
Yeah.
We may never agree on some things, but we shouldn't stop talking about it. And we should show our values wherever they are. Show a good value and you will be believed. And too many people do fake things. They bring over movie stars. They do all kinds of things. That doesn't really tell people. And then go to work at something. So I really worked all the time gathering people together. We did a big breast cancer event right in front of the embassy and the Academy of Science, and walked across their bridge, lit mm-hmm. their bridge pink. And it was the first time that women my age and a little younger started talking about breast cancer out loud.
Wow.
And from that moment on, they loved it. Also, I started collecting their art. Everybody told me, oh, well, that's not the thing you should be investing in. You should be investing in American art. I said, I love America. I am an American. I have some things that I like that are American, but I'm in a country and I appreciate their culture and I want right. them to know that. And frankly, they weren't very expensive. I got a lot of things that some of them were, but most of them were. I was more interested in the culture because right. the language is so difficult. The only way, Michael, I could understand things was by artists don't lie. So if you watch what they're painting in a certain era, you'll know how they felt about everything. It's just interesting.
How do you bring that? How do you then bring that back home so that Americans appreciate what you know to be the case when you're on assignment and you're there? That disconnect between yeah. our you know, the citizens and the work that individuals like yourself are doing as ambassadors. How do we help people appreciate that connection a little bit better?
Well, you know, it wasn't right on purpose right away, but it was when I got back, brought all this stuff with me that I'd collected. My father thought I'd lost my mind. But anyway, and then we started being invited to do exhibitions mm-hmm. in different American museums. People who'd never seen Hungarian painters, really. We have mm-hmm. some collections in the U.S., but not, you wouldn't know.
Right. You
know. And we've had about 16 exhibitions in different universities and art museums and even in some private spaces. And it's just helped people understand how where we do come together and where we don't. And the history of each picture is very interesting because they too were under domination. And then some horrific things happened mm-hmm. during World War II. As you know, I'm Jewish. I'm of the Jewish faith. And there were 600,000 Jewish people living in Hungary, and 400,000 of them were sent to camps and annihilated by the Nazis and by some of the citizens of Hungary. Yeah. It was a shameful moment. And though nobody's going to shake a finger anymore. So many years have gone by, but you know what? You can never again. You have to, it's a never again sentence that you say that won't happen anywhere. And I think Ukraine is a great reminder of that.
Right. And that, so let's bring it back to that point, because now we've come full circle in that regard, because at the end of the day, that is an underlying concern for a lot of people, that what may happen as Russia continues to roll into Ukraine, the reference that was made by the Russian leadership to Zelensky as a, you know, wanting to remove the Nazi leader. I mean, you're saying this about the yeah. Jewish president whose family were victims of the Holocaust,
just awful.
So you're sitting here and you begin to see how these narratives are created to redefine how people look at individuals and how they perceive what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it begins to lay a very dangerous predicate for horrific actions later, whether we're going to round people up and start putting them in concentration right. camps, or mm-hmm. we're just going to go in and just you know, wipe out entire areas of Ukraine. How do you see this storyline right now, the pushback by the Ukrainian people, I mean, grandmothers out there learning right. how to use AK-47s, right? To defend their neighborhoods, their homes, their families. The clear frustration of the Russian leadership, particularly Putin, who, as reported this morning, was very angry that this initiative is still going on. He thought they'd be done by now and sort of wiped out everybody and had Zelensky in handcuffs. Do you see this playing out, and what concerns you? What concern do you have as you watch these storylines play out?
The biggest concern I just never want to see is the recolonization of these forces all over Europe, because you know it can happen. You see this happening. Sometimes it's happened in America and then it was blown away. People don't like colon. They don't like being, told what to believe and do after they've had a chance to express themselves. I still think that the loser in this is going to be Putin, because mm-hmm. I don't see how the people in Ukraine will ever respect him again. And frankly, he's been in Russia for 20 years. Now, he's a smart, capable guy, and he's done some things with the economy that, he's had some very good things done, but he seems like he's acting from a kind of an older paradigm of the Soviet leader, force, no fluff, no talk, even though they say they're meetings, no one really sees much coming out of those meetings. And I think at the end, they're going to be a loser. I fear the grid going down just like everyone else does. And are they going to do something with cybersecurity? There are a lot of things they can do to us. But I think at the end, we have to be the stalwart defenders of freedom and personal choice and, national morals and in respect for other countries. Mm-hmm. We need to be the leader of that.
We are having a great conversation with Ambassador Nancy Brinker, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to move from the international stage to a more familiar domestic stage with the ambassador right after this.
The Sports Psychology Hour with Dr. Andrew Jacobs is a conversation about success in sports and life, coaching, youth sports, and so much more. Listen to athletes, coaches, parents, and just ordinary folks like you who want to achieve and have fun doing it. Now you can support the show at patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. Get access to ad-free content and exclusive Patreon-only episodes. Just go to patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. That's patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Michael Steele Podcast. I want to continue our conversation with Ambassador Nancy Brinker. She is regarded as the leader of the global breast cancer movement. Her work with the Susan G. Komen Foundation is one for the ages. You are all familiar with that great work. A lot of you may not be aware that she served as an ambassador on behalf of the United States, representing the United States not once, but three times. And so she brings a great deal of skill, insight, and intellect to the conversation about what's going on globally. And now, Nancy, we want to move a little bit closer to home and talk about you and I are both Republicans, we still put that flag up and remind people of the importance of the proposition from our founding about individual rights, liberties, freedoms, free markets, a free enterprise system, strong national defense, all of those things which seem to have been jettisoned in recent years by Republican leadership, certainly the former Republican president of the United States. How do you assess the party right now? You are a host on a program, Conservative Network, Newsmax. I've in the past worked at Newsmax, appeared on their program, know the leadership there, great folks. And so you kind of see, you're getting a vision of both sides. You're inside the tent, you're outside the tent. So you really have a better appreciation of some of the dynamics that most would not have. How, in the first instance, are you assessing this very different Republican Party? And what does that mean going forward in your view?
The only thing I have to say is there were some good things President Trump did. I thought the Accords were a good program and other mm-hmm. things, and had friends who worked in administration. But, you know, we are a country also has been taught in school, no name calling, right. no, you know, doing those kinds of things, racist slurs, even if they don't sound like them, they are.
Right. Right.
And I want to see the country, and maybe I'm a bit of a Pollyanna. I personally like one of my very favorite presidents was Dwight David Eisenhower. That's because mm-hmm. I got to meet him when I was seven. And I just had such regard for his leadership, that kind of solid, you know, here's the problem. And right. we had several presidents like that. Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, a lot of wonderful presidents we've had who may be flawed in certain ways. But this is a different time. I worry that the Republican Party has to stop name calling mm-hmm. and they have to start building a bigger tent. Mm-hmm. You can't win an election or the fealty of a country unless you know the people.
Right.
And that's kind of what I was thinking about Russia. You know, Vladimir Putin's been this brilliant leader, and yet know your people and know where they are. And in our country, people are still wounded from COVID, still wounded from I grew up in Peoria, Illinois, where right. Caterpillar largely left, these mm-hmm. these big companies and manufacturing's gone away. We have our own pain to fix in America, and we should be doing it together, and we should be including more people, or we're not going to have a big enough tent to continue to win elections. I believe we have to open the door.
Well, that brings me to a very powerful piece that you wrote and came out this week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
You made it very clear, and the headline said it all. I'm a Republican and a former diplomat. Don't say gay is a dangerous policy. Mm-hmm. And this was your response to the Florida House Representatives passing HB 1557, the Don't Say Gay bill, which would limit when and how, I can't even believe I'm saying this out loud, how teachers and school staff can discuss gender and sexual orientation in the classroom. Walk us through your response there, because it really does speak at the heart of that Big Ten philosophy. Myself as a grounded grassroots activist, having worked with log cabin Republicans pretty much mm-hmm. close to the origination of mm-hmm. of that organization back in the day, this was an affront to that idea of the Big Ten.
And it really, really was. And it almost makes me cry. My son is gay. I'm so proud of him. He's now fully grown up. He's 46 and he's a very successful man. And he's proud to be who he is. Mm-hmm. And we had a discussion about this the other day. And he said to me, you know, Mom, I don't think you realized, as much as you and Dad tried to love me and make sure I did love him, make sure everything in my world was as normal and I had as much advantage. And I knew you knew I was gay, but you never asked me. And that was a good thing. He said, if I had to go to school and admit that I was gay and I had whatever the parameters of that bill are and have people, he said, I might have committed suicide. Yeah. And the reason he's so active in these organizations is that so many of these young people are still taking their own lives because of the shame they suffer, because they want to fit in. They just want to be accepted.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of his friends. They lead major organizations. They have big government jobs. They are very successful people, but they all still carry a little bit of the wound of not being accepted, or the fear of even saying that they might be somewhat different than most of the population is. So I'm really a big sword carrier on this one. And when I hear other Republicans go down on this issue so badly and say things in a room of people that they don't even know who they're speaking to and insulting, I've thought a few times, Michael, of just dropping out and saying I'm just going to be an independent voter, but I can't do that.
Yeah.
And but I have walked up and said to them, you need to be careful what you're saying here. You need to be very careful, because you're infringing on people's rights and who they are. And I just hope, I work with Ileana Rose-Lehtinen, who was a wonderful congresswoman, and she and I worked on so many diversity issues, mm-hmm. and I was a signer of the bill or the change in the Constitution, the amicus brief on gay marriage, and I was very proud of that. And yet I got hate notes, and I got, you know, hateful things called, and they'd hang up the phone. But, you know, you have to stand up for who you are, and the Republican Party of all parties should right. be accepting of people who believe in life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, believe in being left to seek your happiness, your peace, your independence. And if you want your fortune or whatever you want, your education. And we've always, that's always the party that I knew and the one I was raised in. And it isn't, doesn't seem to be like that. They're very, very judgmental people still that make me sad.
Well, there were two paragraphs that stood out for me in this piece. You say, quote, "It's not difficult to connect LGBTQ rights with conservative philosophy. Stronger, right. more loving and stable families, regardless of gender, equate to less reliance on and demand for state services. It also means that government does not stand in the way of individual rights and freedoms. As a mother, I can also attest to the fact that one of the most important parts of parenting is teaching confidence and values that give kids a strong foundation for life. When politicians create laws that ban certain curriculum and books across the state, they're not only interfering with the ability of local schools to teach our kids, but they're also interfering with the rights of local parents to align what kids learn at school with the values they learn at home." That's what I call a drop the mic moment, because in the face of all of these parents being riled up at school board meetings over CRT, LGBTQ children in the classroom, particularly transgender kids. That piece, is the part that they don't get, that these types of actions and laws by leaders like Governor DeSantis mm-hmm. go directly to the interference with the rights of those parents to align what their kids are learning with what they're learning at home. Because you know those parents are not teaching their kids to hate gay kids. You know why they're not? Because cousin Julius is gay.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Aunt Robbie is a lesbian. Uncle Robbie is gay, and Aunt Lucy is a lesbian. So they're not teaching that. They're like you with your son and so many other families, even in my own family with family members, you work to love and grow together as they journey through that chapter in their life. And so this idea that we're now going to burn books and we're going to ban the conversation, what do you think people are going to stop being gay because you say you can't use the word gay?
I mean, or this, and Michael, this notion of this conversion therapy that yes. honestly, I mean, that's torture. That's torture. We gave that up centuries ago. I thought that was right. out, even where they were still practicing it in some places. But the point is, you're absolutely right. I mean, this so throws in the face of the Republican Party. And I know it brings the heat up in the room. People love to have something to riot about and say things about, but this is the wrong issue, as most of them are today. We ought to be looking for value in our members of the Republican Party. It occurs to me, smart people who want to participate in keeping a democracy solid, keeping our capitalism, even though we need to address some things, and of course we need to make things as fair as we can. Mm-hmm. But you know what? This is our country to do it. Go back to how we started. We are given those rights to protest. We're given those rights to speak out. And something like this, you might as well lock these kids up in a room somewhere in a jail and throw out the key. And
I love how you have just again very carefully move to the next point. And it goes to a piece that you wrote back last year, in November of last year, for Newsmax, in which it was titled Protecting Democracy begins with enhanced civic education, because this all ties into what we're seeing now is a lack of that civic understanding of how this country actually functions. Good. You know, I get it. I grew up, you grew up through very dramatic, very changing times in this country, war and peace questions, the religious explosion as a Catholic for me in our church, in the Jewish community, a firmer understanding by all peoples about what happened to the Jewish people. All of these dynamics were important in sort of telling the civic story of this country, how the government responded, how, laws were passed that, negatively or favorably impacted communities of color and women and so forth. So that civic lesson is an important component. So now when you're getting into this idea of burning books and sort of demonizing capitalism and demonizing others because you disagree with them, it flies in the face of our civic responsibility to educate and inform the next generation so that they can carry on and improve upon.
Do I have time to tell you one little story?
Oh, you certainly do, girl.
What you're saying so resonates with me and my American experience. My mother and father were fierce protectors of democracy. Mm-hmm. And we had a bit of a divided household. Mother was a little more on the left. Dad was on the right. So, we got... But every winter when we were... I was from six on going forward. Every winter, my mom and dad would drive us to Florida for a vacation. And of course, we had to stop and use the restrooms in Mississippi and Georgia and various places. And I'll never forget this as long. When you talk about examples of democracy, each of us as private citizens needs to do that. Practice it and practice it with your kids. And my mother did something that day that changed my life. I didn't even know it. We stopped at a fueling station and she took me and I saw the bathroom sign that said colored. And I started to walk towards it. I thought you went in there and colored with your paper and crayons.
Yeah.
And I was young, I was 6 years, 7 years old. And Mother Ram, I felt this hand at the back of my neck and she grabbed me and she said, if I ever see you walk in that room without taking women with you to go where we go to the bathroom, you will be grounded for months. I said, oh my God. She said, you are never to do that. That is, and so at that point, my father's listening to this and all of a sudden some people are gathering around. He said, honey, we are the only people here that are going to get arrested. So let's get in the car, given your speech, you won't do it anymore. And nobody else should either, he said. I was proud of my dad. Nobody should do this. And you know what? But that was an active, if we would do that more with our kids and say, here's right, here's wrong. Here's why America is America. And give them a civic. Now they don't even teach Michael civics in grade school anymore.
No.
Teach it.
Yeah. And look, our history is complex. It's tortured. Mm-hmm. It's at times ugly and difficult. It is at other times brilliant and wonderful. And so all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly of it needs to be taught so that we can become a better people.
Really?
And the way we become a better people is how we teach our children, because that's part of the legacy they carry into the future. I got into a discussion, let's put it that way, recently with someone, and they were talking about, all of this is, it's just stressing out, my child, and I'm like, do you have any idea what it's like to grow up as a Black kid?
Right, exactly. Oh my God.
For the last 400 years, not the last 40 weeks since we've been having this dumbass discussion about CRT. But for the last 400 years, do you know what you want to talk about stress?
Yeah.
Do you know what it's like for my sons when they get pulled over by a cop? Do you want to have that conversation? So this lack of appreciation of what that's like comes from a lack of education and information.
That's right.
That tells the story. And one of the things that I appreciated about both of the pieces that you wrote about, you know, this enhancing civic education and this crazy Florida anti-gay bill is it does very much emphasize y'all can't be stupid. you can't stay stuck on stupid people. You've got to inform and educate your kids. You cannot miseducate your children and teach them the wrong lessons, because that's what's going to get carried into the future.
Right.
And right. That's not good for our republic. It's not good for the democracy that we promote. And so I just wanted to call that out for, you know, folks. You can check out both of those pieces by Nancy at the floridapolitics.com site for her response to the Don't Say Gay legislation, and over at newsmax.com for Protecting a Democracy Begins with Enhanced Education. And for you, what I loved about both of those, despite all the things you've done diplomatically, your own personal journey on behalf of your sister and the cancer, you still find a way to sort of bring it home for the rest of us to also look at all these other things that are equally important in our lives and that we need to take responsibility for.
Well, I appreciate that, Michael. And, you know, we just started our new organization here called the Promise Fund of Florida, and that was really built around the huge widening gap of disparities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, President Nixon declares a war on cancer. 50 years later, here we are with all this research. Yes, we haven't cured it yet, but we've helped many, many people live a long time. But what we don't do is apply what we know. What we know is that early screening saves lives or right. creates at least an environment where you don't have an advanced disease. And who suffer most, of course, the Black women in our country die 40% more often and faster than anyone else. Hispanics are close behind.
Mm-hmm.
And even Caucasian populations, if a disease like these, cervical or breast cancer, are left untreated or unscreened, our death rates are rising, not falling. And because we're not applying what we know. And we have some we built a new model. It's working. We've already educated, screened, treated, and now we're going to create a continuum of care. And we've already helped 15,000 women of that 80,000 population get the services they need.
Has this foundation, the newly formed Promise Fund of Florida, what's been the alignment, or are you looking to align with President Biden's re-emphasis now on the cancer program that he started when he was vice president?
We're looking to connect with everybody, anybody who's interested in cancer and how we can lessen the death rate, and then close off the disparities, get rid of what we're doing in many ways, and apply what we know. It's never been less expensive. It's never been more available or accessible. Deliver the services people need and go forward. And we are really working. I went to the moonshots. They invited me to the last meeting. And, you know, I've worked with the Bidens off and on many of their initiatives mm-hmm. over the years. And this is where the best legislation, as you know, happens. When
right.
people actually work together on good stuff, when they know they can get something done.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of proud of what they're doing. I wish we would do that kind of thing in the Republican Party, but we can't seem to get out of our own way sometimes.
Well, no, we can't. Certainly not these days. You know, there was a reason why George Bush Sr. had 1,000 points of light and George Bush 43 talked about compassionate conservatism, because those gentlemen knew, as you and I both know, that there are very much those elements inside our party, which unfortunately are not given the kind of air to allow themselves to grow and flourish. And it gets back right. to what we were saying about the big tent. That's part of that tent that many of us over the years have tried to create.
Right.
But, you know, look, the work is important. Whether the Republican Party gets it or not, at this point, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is too important to have it get hung up on folks who don't understand the value of what you're doing, the service that you've brought on behalf of the country, for the country, in both of these spaces, as a diplomat, as someone who has really rolled up her sleeves to get us focused on research and curing cancer. So you can't let that let the politics sideline you, and that's what I think is so admirable about what you've done in this space. And Ambassador Brinker, it's just been a real treat to have you come on and spend some time and share the good work that you're doing, and to give us some insights on some of the complexities of what's going on around us globally these days.
Well, let me return the compliment very sincerely. When you came here to Florida to give your speech at our forum club, it was really, really appreciated and enlightening us with some of your life story and the things you have done. Let me return the compliment. And you've really hung in there. And thank you very much for having me today. I'm very honored and getting to talk about the work I love and the work that frustrates me and the work I love every day to get up and do.
Well, as we like to say, you do it, girl, you do it, you know, and you have done it well. And there are a lot of folks out there that have been blessed and are grateful for that work. And, you know, again, the work on behalf of both the Promise Fund of Florida and the Susan G. Komen Foundation is just phenomenally important. And again, thank you for your work as a diplomat, because it's always nice to know you were there on that wall for us. So we really appreciate it. So folks, that wraps it up for our conversation. This time, it's always a treat when you drop by and spend a moment with us. You can find us on the Spreaker app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Check out Ambassador Brinker on Twitter at Nancy G. Brinker. Give her a follow to keep up with the good work that she's doing, particularly in the cancer space. And, you know, there are resources I'm sure that you can find that may be helpful to you if you are in need of such resources. And until next time, be safe, be well, take care, and God bless Ukraine and the good people there. And you guys behave yourselves until we meet again.
The Sports Psychology Hour with Dr. Andrew Jacobs is a conversation about success in sports and life, coaching, youth sports, and so much more. Listen to athletes, coaches, parents, and just ordinary folks like you who want to achieve and have fun doing it. Now you can support the show at patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. Get access to ad-free content and exclusive Patreon-only episodes. Just go to patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. That's patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. All right, America, you asked for it. Or maybe you didn't, but either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So we are going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us, the way Americans do, on a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news, weird politics, weird country, Facepalm America. Listen to Facepalm America, a podcast that laughs at America and its politics, from Beowulf Rocklin, producer of The Rick Unger Show. Facepalm America, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you download your digital distractions in audio form.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.